Good evening. It's now 6 o'clock. We can start our meeting. Are we ready? I'd like to call the meeting of the Aurora Grande Planning Commission for the meeting of Tuesday, December 5th, 2017, to order. Can we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Commissioner George?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Shiro?
Here.
Chair Martin?
Here. You can please stand and follow Commissioner Fowler Payne in our pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, as we review the agenda, is there any of the commissioners that wish to revise the order of any of the agenda items here tonight? Hearing none, we will move on. This to the community comments and suggestions period. This public comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on the agenda tonight. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And the Brown Act restricts the Commission from taking any formal action on matters not published on the agenda. And we also request that public comments be limited to 3 minutes and be accompanied by the voluntary submittal or speaker slip to facilitate our meeting organization and the preparation of the minutes. Is there anyone in the public tonight that would like to speak to the Commission on matters not on the agenda here tonight?
They want to speak on Popeyes.
If you'd like to make a comment on an item that is not on the agenda, you're welcome to come up at this point and do that.
Good evening. I'm Kevin Tardiff. I live at Fay Avenue. I work for San Luis County. I've been there for 30 years. Traffic. That's what I do. I know you all are very busy people, especially at this time of year. I have one very important thing to ask of you. Please take some time out of your day to go drive through our neighborhood and see if you really think a drive-through restaurant will fit. Try to make a left turn on Halcyon from Fay. Try making a left turn on Grand from El Camino Real. Try to make a left turn on Grand from Bell. Try to make a left turn onto Grand from North Alpine. Check out the strange intersection at El Camino Real and Fay and Bell Street. And please make sure you try these areas at peak hours. At about 450 more cars per day, this, and imagine the traffic it will cause. I spoke with the manager at Santa Maria Popeyes, and he told me their daily traffic through drive-through and dine-in restaurants serve an average of 450 customers. 314 drive-through and 142 dine-in. This number per day. I know our city is not as large as Santa Maria, but the restaurant is not visible from the freeway, and they do not get the high numbers of visitors we get on the Central Coast. Tell me these numbers are not going to affect our neighborhood. They are quite a lot higher than ones they proposed at the September 18th, 2017 Traffic Commission meeting. I'm not sure who did the traffic study and how they came up with the fact that this will not be a big impact on our streets. They did a study on major intersections but did not factor in the impact in will make on our neighborhood streets. This is our neighborhood and our home. We do not welcome the traffic, the smell, the garbage, or late hours that this will put upon us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I'm going to allow this as a little bit out of sequence. You're speaking on the item of Popeyes. It will probably get deferred later in our agenda, but so I'm going to let you, since you're right here right now, to speak. Thanks.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'm Terry Tardiff, and I live on Fay Avenue. I'm here to talk about a drive-through Popeyes possibly going into our neighborhood. Have they done a traffic study on how a drive-through restaurant is going to affect our neighborhood, or a study on how strong the smell of grease or exhaust will be, or a study of how much garbage will be blowing through an already garbage-ridden area due to the park and ride, or a study on the noise it'll generate? There was a traffic study done, but there, not that I know of, have been any studies done on how it's going to affect our neighborhood. You've talked about two-hour parking signs to keep employees from parking on our street all day. What if our family and friends stay longer? Do we have to tell them, sorry, you have 2 hours? There are already four-hour parking signs that are not enforced, but again, that limits us as residents and on our parking time as well. I just don't know that the parking signs will be the right solution. Enforcement of other rules to be put into place, like delivery trucks, speed limits, and hours of operation, it just doesn't seem like they'll be enforced either. There are already no truck signs on our street that are not followed or enforced. I've given you a picture. I mean, it's pretty clear there's no trucks, but there he's parked. It happens all the time. There's always trucks going through there. Who's going to do the enforcement of the rules? It just doesn't seem like it gets enforced already. It will become our jobs as a neighborhood to deal with enforcing it. You may as well put us on the payroll and introduce us to your code enforcement people if this goes through. I understand the desire to put a drive-through restaurant in this location, but is it the best fit? No, I don't think so. You're imposing a lot of nasty stuff on a little neighborhood. Please think long and hard before your decisions are made. And there's other places. What about the lot over by Orchard Supply? It makes much more sense for it to be in an area where businesses and drive-thrus are already located. You put a stop to a billiard hall going into an area with senior residents because it didn't fit. Put a stop to a drive-thru restaurant in a family neighborhood because it really doesn't fit. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Are there any other comments from the community on items that are not on the agenda tonight? Seeing none, I'm going to close community comments at this point and move on to item 6, written communications. This is correspondence supplemental information for the Planning Commission received at the agenda preparation. I think that we've received it on our package. Anything else, any last-minute additions?
It appears that we've additionally received pictures, which will be provided to you, but that's in addition to the item that you
I think
were,
we all have that.
You have that as well? Okay.
Those photos.
Then those would be the two additional items this evening.
Okay. Correct. Okay, next is the consent agenda. There are two items on the consent agenda. One is the approval of the minutes of our last meeting, and the second item is a lot line adjustment in subarea 2. Unless there's a specific request to separate these two items, I'm going to entertain a motion for approval of both items on the consent agenda.
Chair, I move to approve both the minutes of the meeting and the lot line adjustment, 7A and 7B.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on either one of these items? Hearing none, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Chair Martin?
Yes. Okay, the next item on here is a public hearing. This is a continued consideration of lot merger 16001 and the conditional use permit and a mitigated negative deck for a 2,900 square foot fast food restaurant at El Camino Real and Fay. Staff report, a brief staff report or comments on this item?
Certainly. So brief comments. At the October 17th meeting, the Planning Commission voted to continue this item to a date of tonight, December 5th. Subsequent to the October meeting, the applicant requested that tonight's public hearing be continued to a date uncertain as they continue to work through and modify the site appropriately to try and address Planning Commission and neighborhood comments. So that's the recommendation in front of you that tonight is to condition it or continue it to a date uncertain. We will notify the neighborhood when the new public hearing date is scheduled, and we will re-notice it in the paper as well.
Very good.
Question with the noticing. Does that also include putting up a new project sign saying when the date of the hearing is going to be held?
Yes, it would.
Okay, thank you.
The date would be revised. Correct.
Okay, any other questions of staff on this item? With hearing none, I'm going to entertain a motion to continue this item to a date uncertain.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second to continue this public hearing item on the lot merger 16001 and the conditional use permit 16-008. Are there any discussion from the commissioners? Hearing none, can we have a roll call vote on this item, please?
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Chair Martin?
Yes. So this item is continued to a date uncertain. For those that are curious, whether they're watching at home or here in the audience, if you're within the appropriate zone, you will get a postcard at home, hopefully. And if not, certainly you're welcome to drive by the site and see when that date is determined and that sign in at the site is updated to reflect the date in which this item gets agendized, and we continue the hearing on that item. With that, let's proceed to item 8B. It's a consideration of appeal 17003 on a determination related to a view shed review 17-009 on a rooftop deck at 1211 Linda Drive. Do we have a staff report for this, please?
Yes, good evening, commissioners. Do we have the PowerPoint for the
slide? There we are. So,
has been stated this is consideration of appeal 17-003, the appeal of determination related to view shed review 17009. It's an 178 square foot rooftop deck addition. This project is located at 1211 Linda Drive. It's zoned single family, and surrounding land uses include single family homes and then Ocean View Elementary to the north. Originally, this project obtained a building permit for a 482 square foot single story addition. This project was red tagged by the building division. There was some effort to modify the project midway through building permit, after the building permit issue had been issued, I should say, during construction. The project was revised to include this rooftop deck portion of the project. Due to some confusions on the contractor side about what exact modifications would be needed, construction began on the rooftop deck and was subsequently red-tagged by the building division. They were informed they needed the view shed review permit to construct a second story, so that was applied for back on September 25th, 2017. And this view shed review was approved in late October and approved the construction of an 178 square foot rooftop deck. Before going into too many details on the project, the primary purpose of the single family district is to provide for the residential developments on common sized suburban lots. New rooftop decks applied for after November 28th, 2017 would not require a view shed review due to new rooftop deck design guidelines adopted by the City Council. Going back to early March, I believe it was, we had sort of a similar project in front of the Planning Commission, and staff was directed at that time to put together some design guidelines to actually remove this requirement for new rooftop decks. As I said, this project was applied for before any of these guidelines were even finalized, much less in effect. So they were not reviewed. This project wasn't reviewed with those in mind. That being said, the project as proposed would not have conformed to the design guidelines due to the non-integrated location of the access. We'll go through the development standards in a second, but as you see here, the stairway cantilevers off of the rooftop deck towards the ocean, and it's not exactly integrated into the rooftop deck as prescribed in the design guidelines that are now in effect. In terms of development standards, the home is located on a slightly too small lot, but it's a legal non-conforming lot that was created legally in terms of all setbacks and maximum height. The project meets all development standards, including being about 14.6 tall at the peak of the guardrail surrounding the deck. So sort of in considering this project as a view shed review, the purpose of the view shed review is to preserve the existing scope and character of established single-family neighborhoods and to protect views and aesthetics and other property values in such neighborhoods in a manner that is compatible with reasonable expansion on existing developed lots. Those emphases are mine. So there were two reasons submitted for the appeal, and we'll go through these both, being the view shed impacts created by the deck and the privacy impacts created by the deck. The view shed impacts, this project will be visible both from across Window Drive as well as driving through the neighborhood. That being said, the deck is set into the roof line and will exceed the ridge line of the roof by approximately a foot for a total of maximum height of 14 foot 6 inches. That height impact is created by the mandatory guardrails. In the California Building Code, these are mandated to be 3 foot 6 inches for safety reasons. Possible mitigations that could be included, but were not at approval, were more visually permeable guardrails. These are currently proposed to be sort of a stucco all the way around. They would not be visually permeable. The reason it was designed this way, and in staff's consideration, acceptable reason to not make them more permeable, was due to the privacy impacts created by permeable guardrails in both directions. For example, if someone were to be standing on the rooftop deck and looking up at it, or standing on the rooftop deck and looking down into a neighboring property, that permeable view shed would create more of a viewing angle into neighboring yards as opposed to a solid barrier creating more of an outwards vista. In terms of privacy impacts, privacy of neighboring properties is always taken into careful consideration and is one of the main reasons for the view shed review process to exist. That being said, in light of reasonable two-story developments on hillside properties, privacy impacts are borderline inevitable. Just based on topography of an area, possible mitigations that could be included would include requirement for some form of screening of vegetation along a property line, perhaps. So there are advantages to the denial of the appeal. Denial of the appeal will allow the project to move forward. The project meets all standards of the development code, and it permits reasonable development of a residential property. Disadvantages impacts will be created, both in regards to privacy and neighboring view sheds. However, when considering the limited size and visual presence of the deck, especially in comparison to a potential two-story addition, we believe these disadvantages were mitigated properly. In terms of environmental review, it is exempt per CEQA guidelines regarding small additions to existing structures. The public hearing notice was published in the Tribune and posted at City Hall. The agenda was posted in accordance with government codes. We did receive 14 letters of support for the appeal to be approved. Were received after agenda preparation, and in terms of signposting, it's not required for appeals. It is recommended that the Planning Commission adopt the prepared resolution denying Appeal 17003 and approving View Shed Review 17009, and staff is happy to take any questions of the Commission at this time.
Very good. Thank you. Are there questions to the staff from the commissioners? Ms. Fowler-Payne, do you have a question?
Well, I don't really have a question, but I'm very familiar with that area because I owned the house at 1210 Linda Drive from 1969 to 1973. So I know that the elevation of that house is 8 feet higher than the curb on the other side of the street in front of 1211, and that that house sits down in the slope. So any obstruction of their view isn't going to be significant. And you can, if you drove by there, you can kind of see that that wall that they had put up there is kind of a storyboard. That view corridor from 1210 Linda Drive is more towards the direction of the intersection and not straight across the street, because behind the house at 1211 is used to be a storage yard. I'm not sure if it is any longer. But I took into consideration the, I don't know, do you want me to go on?
At this point, let's just try to focus on questions for staff, and we can have comments in a couple minutes. So
okay, well, I do have one question on this.
If you have a question, let's go.
I drove by. I looked at all the addresses that were on the that we got on the webpage for the property with regards to the comments that they said this would change the neighborhood and what all. But when I did, I found that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of the people that were listed on this appeal or signed the petition on the appeal all had improvements done to those houses since they were built. The houses were built in 1963. They were all exactly the same. You can drive down that street. You can see they've got second stories. They've got decks on the back. They've got decks in the front. And I made a list of every one of the houses on that street that had improvements done to it. Now, whether it's was done, I'm sure they were done with a permit because they were secondary units. So with that in mind, can you tell me if there was any kind of a check to see if these houses were permitted for their decks that they have on there?
No, staff did not go through the addresses of the submitted letters and check for improvements and potential permits. No.
Well, I did, and that's what I'm saying. There was nine that were on that list that had improvements. The other thing is, and this is kind of off there, but because I did drive around there, I think this is a fire department condition that they have their street address on their unit. A lot of them didn't have addresses. You could barely make it out on the curb. So I just wanted to throw that one out that they may need to look into that. So that's kind of my comment and my question.
Okay, we'll have time for comments in a little bit. Let's just continue with any questions. Commissioner Mack, do you have questions for staff?
Was this run through the architectural review at all? And if not, why not?
Fuchsia reviews are not taken by default to architectural review unless they're located in a historic overlay district, for example. Staff do have the option to bring Fuchsia reviews to the Architectural Review Board if they feel uncomfortable or if the Community Development Director does not feel comfortable making the findings prescribed in a Fuchsia review. In staff's evaluations of the impacts of this project, staff and the Community Development Director felt comfortable making these findings and did not find it necessary to bring it to the Architectural Review Board.
And during the review shed review, you're primarily looking at blocking other residences' views and obstructing other people's views, whether it's the city, the ocean, or whatnot, correct?
That is part of it, yes. I have the purpose up here on the screen here, and it's preserving existing scope and character, protecting views and aesthetics, property values. So it's been interpreted to mean privacy concerns, view shed impacts in terms of seeing the ocean. Any sort of visual impact is typically what the view shed review process has been interpreted to protect.
So with the view shed review, they made a determination that no privacy issues were being impacted?
So really the key phrase is in a manner that's compatible with reasonable expansion. So in this project, staff has never denied that there are viewshed impacts, that there are privacy impacts created by the project. But in any project reviewed as a viewshed review, it's always a question of the property owner's property rights versus the impacts created by neighboring properties. And in this case, really considering the phrase reasonable expansion of an 175-square-foot deck, staff had been directed in previous months to make this sort of project easier to build. We felt comfortable making the findings that in the context of reasonable expansion and reasonable use of one's property, that those impacts were not enough to warrant a denial of the permit.
Oh, thank you for that interpretation. That's all I have.
Very good.
Didn't we set a square footage amount on the view shed review if it was smaller than...
There's no minimum square footage on view shed reviews, no.
Commissioner George?
when the initial permit was granted, and I don't see it in here anywhere, did it exceed the roof line, the initial permit that they had submitted?
So the initial permit submitted was just for a single-story addition. There was no two-story elements,
right.
Just extended the back of the home back. Once any sort of permit or plan that was submitted showing the rooftop deck, yes, the guardrails always exceeded the ridge line of the roof, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
So that was added on without permit, without being approved, correct? And then at that point, got red flagged, went back to the city. The city looked at it, did a view shed review, and said it was okay. So am I understanding correctly, the second to last slide showed that had it been a month later, it would not have conformed to the new city council approved view shed guidelines.
That's
rooftop guidelines.
Correct. The project could be lightly modified to conform to them. The stairway is really the only issue with it. It meets all of the setback requirements. It meets all the guardrail requirements. The project was not reviewed with those in mind. It had not; those guidelines had not gone to city council at the time. They were still up in the air. So the project wasn't evaluated with those in consideration, would be my answer.
Yeah, but as it stands now, it wouldn't meet our guidelines.
As it stands now, yes. Correct that it would have some issues with implementation of the guidelines, yes.
Okay. And has there been any study done, or is there any easy way for you to explain to me the difference between having a two-story building and looking out a window of the second floor versus sitting on top of a rooftop deck and looking out? Is there a difference in view, in privacy issues?
Good evening, commissioners. Yes, obviously there is a difference between the two. A second story, particularly from a privacy standpoint, obviously second story additions have certain areas of wall that are opaque and block the view out of it, unless you have full glass floor-to-ceiling windows, which not very many homes do. So the areas of view into neighboring properties is limited by where those windows are placed, whereas that's the difference in a rooftop deck, being that you're if you stand up, you can look over the guardrails and see whatever you can see. So it's definitely not as limiting as a traditional second-story addition.
So for a privacy issue, would you say that having a house with two stories above you versus having a deck above you, which one might be more invasive?
That really depends on the scope of both the deck and the second story, and both the location of the home. It's tough to just make an objective statement on that. For example, on a 100-square-foot deck versus a 900-square-foot second-story addition that could potentially impact yards in every direction, with the two-story versus a limited deck potentially only impacting one yard. It's not exactly an apples-to-oranges comparison that can be made.
So was part of the consideration to approve this rooftop deck the height, and because that this may be zoned for a two-story, that it was okay to allow this rooftop deck to go through?
The height issue was taken more into consideration for the viewshed impacts across mm-hmm. a visual street. From mm-hmm. In terms of privacy impacts, it's not as different. But in terms of viewshed impacts, which was the reason designated for the appeal by the appellant,
mm-hmm.
a second-story addition would quite clearly have significantly larger viewshed impacts right. in terms of a wall blocking a view towards an ocean, for example.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Commissioner Schauer?
So right now this area is zoned for 30 feet. That would be max height?
Correct. 30 feet, two stories, as is standard in all residential districts.
And the highest point of this of the deck or is 14.6?
The highest point of the guardrail, correct.
Guardrail, the highest point at the guardrail.
So a standing individual, while not part of the structure, would exceed that by a few feet, yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's all the questions I have.
Okay, the only question I have is more of a kind of a clarification, piggybacking on Commissioner George, in realizing that there's a timing issue between defining what definitions are actually used for these rooftop decks and things. But is it correct that the aspect of this specific rooftop deck plan that is non-compliant is the stairwell that is not integrated and not necessarily the height or the nature of the the height of the deck or the materials that they're being using around the deck.
Correct. In terms of height, setbacks, anything like that, it conforms to all design guidelines. The design guidelines do call for integrated access, preferably interior, integrated into the exterior of the access. In staff's opinion, a stairway, a circular stairway going up isn't exactly integrated into the structure of the building, but that was really the only new design guideline complaint that staff would have in regards to the project, yes.
But the stairway as designed is certainly still within any kind of setback requirements on the rear yard and things of that nature?
Absolutely. The rear of the home, the deck doesn't expand past the rear of the home. The stairway does slightly, but they're, I believe, over 30 feet away from the rear of the property line with a 10-foot setback.
Okay, very good.
And Chair Martin, if I may, I did want to clarify one thing in terms of the design guidelines. So if you'll recall, the intent of putting those rules and regulations into the municipal code was to make the permit process for rooftop decks ministerial. So if somebody submits a building permit application and you meet these qualifications, you get a permit to do a rooftop deck. In this instance, with the non-integration of the stairwell, it would be one of those items that on your checklist, so to speak, you're going down saying, okay, that's not integrated. Now you are required to do a view shed review, and we would have ended up in this potentially in the same location. If the project were to be modified and the stairwell was integrated into the house, I don't know how that would occur, but if it were, then it would be that ministerial checklist item, and it would just be issued a building permit. So I wanted to clarify that.
But in either way, even with that ministerial permit, it still would be subject to an appeal? Which is what we...
No. In this case, ministerial permits are not appealable.
Very good. I just want to make sure that gets clarified as well. So, with that, are there... Should we hear from the appellant at this point before we make our comments? Any kind of public hearing on this item? Is that our protocol?
If that's the will of the commission, yes.
Okay. Is the appellant, is Nancy Walsh here tonight? Does she want to see your, Nancy, why don't you come up here and introduce yourself and make your comments, after which I will open it to the public, but there are other people in the room tonight that would like to speak on this as well.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Nancy Walsh, and I live at 1210 Linda Drive. Around October 24, I received in the mail the notice of approval, view shed project number 17-009, project construction of the 178-square-foot rooftop deck addition, location 1211 Linda Drive. The notice stated that appeals were due by November 8. I submitted my appeal on November 6, which is why I'm here today to speak to you. The notice that I received in the mail was not my first involvement with this project. Many months ago, when I first saw construction being started across the street from me, I wanted to know if it involved a second-story addition. I called the building division and was told that no second story had been permitted, that it was just an addition of a family room on the back side of the house, and the roof itself might be raised a foot taller at its highest peak. Several months later, there were two side walls quickly constructed as part of an above-the-roof deck. A cease and desist order was posted on the garage, and then on September 5th, the order was gone and construction resumed. So I inquired again and was connected with building official Jonathan Hurst. He explained to me that the rooftop deck had been started without a permit, and so the cease order was posted. The order was lifted so the roof could be completed, but there was still no permit for the deck that had been started. Sometime near the end of September, the application for the deck addition was submitted, triggering the view shed review process. I promptly sent an email to Mr. Hurst with pictures taken from my front deck, illustrating the impact the proposed deck addition would have on my view. My email to him reads as follows. The proposed deck project at 1211 Linda Drive above the roofline blocks my view at 1210 Linda Drive, which is directly across the street. I have lived here for 36 years and my intent is to protect my view as it adds to the aesthetics of my home and my neighborhood and to the value of my property. The proposed above the roof deck is boxy, disrupts the view from my property, and does not fit in with the existing scope and character of the neighborhood. I've been interested in the viewshed review process since 1990 and sent a letter at that time to the planning department in support of height restrictions, view protection, and the viewshed review process being expanded to 300 feet. In October of this year, I also sent correspondence and photos to Sam Anderson, and he's the planning technician, and spoke with him on the phone. Sam kept me informed all along the way during the viewshed review process. He let me know when the project had been approved and invited me to review the plans if I so desired. I reviewed the plan with him and also picked up an appeal application. I submitted the appeal on November 6th along with three photos, one from my front deck showing how the view was impacted, one from the east side of the deck on Linda Drive, and one from the backyard of my downhill neighbor at 298 North Elm, who would have zero privacy in his backyard with the deck occupied. I think you have the packet of the photos there. You can look at those, and if you compared those to the attachment number one in your packet, you'd see the difference between what it looked like before those walls were constructed on the deck and what they look like now, what it looked like before and now. I have a large deck, front deck, which was built 30 years ago to extend our living space and specifically to enjoy the view, and that's where I spend a lot of time relaxing. It's a favorite place to relax. Currently, I've spoken with my surrounding neighbors and found many like-minded people who want to protect their views in our neighborhood. Many have joined me by signing a statement that reflects this sentiment. I submitted 14 of these to the Community Development Department yesterday. The signed letters read as follows. I would like to add my support to this appeal. The permitting of this type of square deck above the rooftop sets a bad precedent in our neighborhood, does not fit in with the scope and character of our neighborhood, and should not be considered for approval, especially when it obstructs the view of neighbors and violates privacy of neighbors. Our property values are negatively impacted, and the joy of ownership is reduced. Talking to these neighbors in recent days has been very enlightening. I was able to experience the beautiful views they each had from their own property and hear them say how much it meant to them. My hope is that we can keep this precious resource intact for us all without infringement. I have no personal animosity towards my new neighbors at 1211 Linda Drive. From what I've heard, they have relocated here from another part of California, perhaps for the same reason that most of us did, to enjoy the Central Coast, and in our neighborhood in particular, to enjoy the beautiful views. The neighbor who lived there before they did loved her expansive view from the backyard and without a rooftop deck. In conclusion, I want to thank you for listening to me and taking the time to consider the matter and listening to my concerns and the concerns of my neighbors.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for, if you don't mind hanging out there for a minute,
no,
are there any questions for the appellant on this? None? Apparently there are no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your comments and your involvement here. At this time, I am going to open it up to the public, and if there's anybody else in the room that would like to speak on this rooftop deck matter, now's the time.
Thank you. John Keene, 298 North Elm Street. There's a picture of my backyard. The white fascia board is the floor of that deck. It overlooks every movement I have in my backyard. One of the things this project has come up, it's a three-prong situation. One, the view shed, of course, but the view shed that Nancy has obstructed, and the privacy that I have impacted. Two of the major things of the project is a real good example of what happens when we go through the viewshed. Our problems are completely opposite, but they're still part of the viewshed review. The other problem of this is letting a project be built without a permit. This building something and then going and asking for permission or get a permit is just unacceptable in this city. We had the same problem on Ash Street. Contractor come in there, cut down a whole bunch of trees, everything. Oh, well, too late now, I'll pay the fine. That's just not an acceptable practice as far as I'm concerned. The finding for the privacy in the resolution talks about if that was a second story, how much difference impact that we would have. And I really think that a second story wouldn't be near as impactful as this deck, because, you know, they're looking out a window, they're not thing, they're walking by the window and looking out, they're not on that deck, they're sitting there enjoying a glass of wine or conversation with their friends or whatever. And it just really limits my backyard, my privacy. I doubt very much if it would affect my property values, but I think it would really affect the time that it would take to sell my house. Anybody that's looking at that house would walk out there and say, look at that. So I think that it's just... Thank you.
Go ahead and complete your comments.
I just think that we need to take a real close look at the privacy aspect of these view sheds, because when everybody says, you know, view shed, the first thing that comes to your mind is you're talking about the project blocking somebody's view. But the view shed review also has to do with the privacy of that I'm giving up. One of the things that I've talked about before is when you give somebody the rights to develop their property, you take away some rights of the person adjoining them. There needs to be a balance. For their benefit, I should not lose my rights as having privacy in my own backyard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Is there anybody else who would like to speak? I'll take that just as a matter of form here. Very good. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Joe Farino. I live at 315 North Elm Street. And I'd like to start off by saying I haven't met the new neighbors, and they could easily end up being great friends of mine. And also, I'm not opposed to having a view deck. So why am I here tonight? If you saw that photo with the blue tarp up there, you can see, thank you, you can see where it does in fact affect Nancy's view. Boy, if that was clear plexiglass, then you wouldn't have that problem. And people are saying, well, it's less than if you had a second story. Yeah, I guess it is less if that, but it's also more than if that turned into a sinkhole. So, I mean, you can imagine any scenario you want, but there it is. If that was plexiglass, you wouldn't have that. But actually, now that I'm here, I have a much greater concern than what I came for. I listened to one of the council members talk about as soon as a member spoke up about an issue in the neighborhood, went on a fishing expedition to look at past behavior of people who would dare come to a city council meeting and speak up about a neighborhood issue. You know, what's the moral here? Citizens ought not to speak up about the community? I find this to be tremendously chilling to the democratic process. This is something I think I would see in other countries. You're going to come here and speak up? I'm going to start looking you up and check on your past, and you'll never come here again. I am exceedingly disappointed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Farino. Is there anyone else from the public like to speak on this item?
Sure. I'm the culprit that put on without knowledge of...
If you don't mind introducing yourself.
That's my name is Peter Carlson, and I built the wall, as they said. It's funny because we got a president saying that, so and I'm against a wall. But so
just for clarification, you're the owner of...
No, I'm the contractor.
Oh, you're the contractor. Very
right.
good.
I owner's going to speak next. What I took pictures too, similar ones, and I can pass these around.
Go ahead.
And I just for fun.
You are going to need to stay and speak at the microphone so the video recording can get your comments.
On one of them, I just drew what a second story building that could be built on that would impact, which would be a much higher. We're not married to a certain design, so if somebody has comments, hey, we like good ideas. We're not trying to make enemies of any neighbors or anything like that. As far as when you build, my parents just had a two-story house built next to their house, and they said, great, their property has gone up in value. They bought their house in Palo Alto for $27,000, and they were there for a long time, and the neighborhood's grown a lot. Now the neighbors across the street just sold a house for $2.3 million. So building on and making a neighborhood nicer actually increases property values. It's a fact. You can look anywhere. Nancy's View will, as you can see, has a very small amount. And if the colors, which we're open to, we're looking at maybe grays, whites, very neutral type colors, and the old reason I think a stuccoed wall there on the front part is a good idea is because if there's furniture up there or anything else, it doesn't get seen from the street, from Nancy's house or anybody else's. That was the reason I thought a solid wall would work better. We're not opposed to anything one way or another, but the fact that somebody can come in and try and stop somebody's right to build when I think the height limit is maybe 27, somebody said 30 feet. We're going up 14 to 16 feet maybe, you know, in that ballpark. I didn't pull a tape from average point and everything else, but it's right in there. And that picture that I drew and the story pole, they could build that whole property up to 27 feet, which would really impact a lot of view. Nancy's view toward the ocean isn't impacted. It's only towards the hills. There's a eucalyptus tree behind there that already blocks part of that view. And, you know, if they built trees or something to block, that would block a view too, if they planted trees in their backyard. The property rights, I've been a big advocate of keeping people's property rights because I think that it's really important that if I spend $300,000 or $200,000 or $1 million on my property, I want to be able to develop it within the guidelines of the Planning Commission. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Is anybody else that would like to speak?
Can we ask questions of the applicant?
Okay, here's a question for the... Are you the applicant here? Are you the homeowner?
The homeowner.
Okay. Would you prefer to have the contractor answer questions? I'm assuming they're going to be about... Or do you want to wait and you'll answer those questions? Or?
Well, this is concerning the building and this...
Well, but I'll tell you what.
I can wait for my question.
You'll wait for your question? You wait for the homeowner? Okay. Mr. Homeowner, why don't you come up, introduce yourself, and make your comments. Be prepared to, whether between you or your contractor to answer some questions for us.
Thank you, Commissioners. Nancy, John, thank you for being here. I do value the neighborhood. I value people coming forward when they have issues relative to their property, because they've been there such a long time. I'm going to keep it short. I want whatever is right for Nancy, for John, for myself, for the commissioners. I'm not going to stand up here and give a long testimony about the project. I have my contractor here. He'll answer all questions concerning that. Yes, to admit, we made an error. We should have presented the complete blueprints with a deck. But with my wife and myself, we looked up there and said, hey, that probably would be a good deck. So we proposed it to our contractor, and it went forward. So, yes, am I wrong for that? Of course. Do I have any animosity for John, Nancy? Of course not. Whether it go forward, whether it's denied, no, life will go on. Nancy and John, myself, the neighbor will go on, and we'll still have a turkey dinner next year. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you. Can we get your name for the record? I don't think we got your name at the beginning of the presentation. Pardon?
My name is Jonathan Irons. I live at 1211 Linda Drive.
Very good. Thank you very much. Don't leave the podium quite yet, because I think there are going to be some questions.
Okay.
Your contractor is coming up to join you. So between the two of you, hoping you get these questions answered. Commissioner Mack, do you have a question?
Yeah. First question is it's a small deck. I see 192 square feet or whatnot. What's the purpose of the deck?
Well, the purpose of the deck was for my wife and I, and maybe a couple of friends. We don't have too many friends that will come out here, but if they come out, we'll have somewhere to sit down, maybe look at the ocean and just relax. You know, like look at the sunset romantically and just be really in touch with each other.
Some roof decks are designed for different purposes, or, you know, gatherings or jacuzzi or whatnot. I'm trying to figure out how you intend to use that deck. And
yeah, just a relaxing place to go to, with my wife and friends, to enjoy the view, to enjoy small talk, maybe read a book and watch the sunset set or even rise. Nothing elaborate like parties, no. Nothing that heavy.
And it's not necessarily to get the view, because you already have a view, right, at the looking out the rear of your residence. Yeah. I noticed that your fence is a lot shorter than the fence to your neighbor. It looks like it steps from 6 feet down to 4 feet.
Right. We do have a view on the ground level, but we do have a view on the ground level, but the wires and blocks are complete. A view of the ocean, so we want it a little bit higher if we can have a direct view of the ocean.
So you're not going to develop this into I'm real familiar with a lot of deck projects, more so in Shell Beach, where they put their entire living room. They have an outdoor living room upstairs with a kitchen and a bar and barbecues, and they make that their backyard patio. I'm assuming you're not doing that in this case.
Oh, that's correct. No, it's not going to be anything elaborate like that. Maybe a little music box, just toned down, some little romantic or a little calm music, just to enjoy the sunset. I guarantee it's not going to be a frat house or wild parties, people jumping off the deck or anything, you know, for sure. And it's just going to be like, say, my wife, a couple of friends, and things like that.
Thank you.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Fowler Payne, do you have any questions for the applicant here?
Not for the applicant.
Okay. The applicant here, Commissioner Shiro, Commissioner George.
A quick question for the contractor. Hi.
Yes.
How long have you been a contractor in this area?
Quite a few years, and I've done a lot of projects with Jonathan Hurst repairing a lot of illegal construction here. So I'm familiar with the process, and I actually talked to the building inspector as he came out for our footing review saying we were going to do this, but our architect is very impacted, and we want to get our footings poured, and we were building a big enough footing to be able to go up and do this. We always had this intent to try and come across to do it. I should have not put it up there, but I was trying to get the waterproofing ready. That was the only reason. We knew we were going through the process because these people changed their mind and said, wow, that's really beautiful. And I said, you know, a deck here would give you a fantastic view.
And I agree. The deck would give you a fantastic view. My question is, as a contractor, if you knew that this was something that needed to be permitted, why would you move forward without getting it permitted first?
We were in process of drawing before complaints came in. And my experience working with Jonathan and everybody before was this was such a minor, small thing. And we weren't hiding it from the building inspector or anybody else. Matter of fact, we said we're working on it. And I shouldn't have put the wall up. That's why I said I built the wall. I should have waited till the process was done. I was just trying to get enough up there so they could flash the deck because we had threats of an inch and a half of rain, and we had a lot of the roof, you know, was being torn off. And I was just trying to waterproof the house at that point till the due process got completed. It wasn't trying to sneak something in or anything like that. And then I wound up with a red tag and went, whoa, that's the first time I ever got one of those in 20 years. So usually Jonathan would call me or somebody and say, hey, you got to do something different.
So in the past, this is something that you do often? You go out of permit and then you ask for forgiveness afterwards? I'm just trying to understand because that's kind of what you're saying.
No, as a matter of fact, I try not to do that.
But you're saying every time you do, Jonathan calls you and says, hey, you're kind of going.
No, I said that's what I would have thought would have happened. It's never happened at all.
Okay.
I've never been red tagged till this job in the city of Aurora Grande, and I've done plenty of projects. It's a first for me, a learning experience for me, and I have to apologize to the neighbors and everybody else for stepping out of line. And I didn't mean to do it out of process. And we quickly, as soon as we found out we were irritating people, tried to get everything going, but trying to push an architect when everything's as busy as it is right now is hard to get done.
I understand. So, Thank you.
I was trying to balance it.
I changed my mind.
Okay. You have a question? Go ahead.
Well, I just received a copy of this picture, and it appears that...
That's standing on the ground.
Yeah, on 211's backyard, looking over the fence, but... It's only the area, this picture is at the back of Mr. King's project or property. When you look off of 211's property, they're going to be looking at the roof of Mr. King's property. And I know that house has been completely remodeled. When it was remodeled, was it taken into consideration that it was blocking the view from 211?
It was
because,
not.
Because it is, you know, in front of this house. And I know all of these houses on Elm Street have all been remodeled and second stories and decks and everything else put on them because I know that track. And all those houses on Elm Street... And those four houses on Linda Drive were the exact same house.
Is there a question hiding in here for the applicant?
No, I wanted to know if this picture is just the view corridor of Mr. King's backyard out here, which is further out here.
Yeah,
you're looking at you're looking at his roof.
Deck or not.
So the deck isn't
privacy
just.
Privacy is not really an issue. We're talking about
the deck isn't specifically just over his backyard. It's over a portion of his roof and maybe a portion of his backyard. It's not, I mean, the deck isn't completely centered in his backyard.
You can watch the back fence, which is still on their property. They can even move the fence farther back.
I'm sorry, we need you to step to the microphone to speak.
To answer that question, that picture that you're looking at is standing behind the fence that they put in, which is not even on the property line. Their property even goes farther back than that. And if they wanted to move that fence back, they have every right to move that fence back even without a permit. They don't want to do that. They're not trying to infringe on any
neighbors. When you say move back, you mean further from the house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they could even come farther down the hill.
Slope.
Down the
with a fence.
Because the hillside...
Because it starts
outside of that
dropping at that
fence
point, and
down.
That just is an easy place to put a fence. Is
Very
why
good.
It got put there. They own the property even behind that farther.
Very good.
So they're looking on their own property over the fence even.
But the deck isn't just looking over his backyard. The deck is over a portion of where the roof is on the house. So
yes.
It's not like
yes.
The deck is centered in the backyard.
No, the deck is. The original design had a sloped wall, and John asked me, hey, could we put a deck there? And I said, well, sure, because I know the codes, and I know it's all legal, and, you know, the building restriction heights. I said, it'll take some time. We'll have to do some drawings, but, yeah, we can do that. And I still think that he has every right to do that because they got a 27-foot height limit, and that's far below that.
I mean, it's not even close. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is not a negative one to you.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that portion of this deck is overlooking the top roof of his house, not specifically his backyard.
Yeah.
So it's not a
Knowing John, he's at work most of the time anyway. He'll be up there for an hour a day maybe, if he's lucky, if he gets home quick enough to see the sunset.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Do you see what I'm talking about?
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the commission? I'm going
to give Mr. Keene a chance to address.
You're right. Mr. Keene, would you like to come up and, as the homeowner of the house immediately adjacent and down the hill from there, I think you have a right to
put
come up.
Put up that picture again of my backyard, please. That is my backyard. That deck is not over part of my roof. When I put my addition on in that house, I instructed the architect to go up to that property and get an elevation on the patio. And I said, you design my house, but it cannot be any higher than that elevation on that patio. And I did it specifically so they wouldn't lose any of their view. I could have put two stories up, but I didn't want to impact their view and the house next to it, of course. So to say that the houses in that neighborhood are two-story and they've been built up and everything is much hooey.
Yep.
Mr. Keene, I do have a question for you before you run off. Where is the property line between your property and 12 Loon? Is that the block wall or halfway up?
It's halfway up.
So about the midpoint of that hillside that's covered with the ivy and
everything,
bougainvillea or whatever else that is sitting up there is, so it's that hillside is approximately half yours and half your neighbor's.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
But he's right on the upper lip with that fence.
Correct. He put his fence, I'm going to say 8 to 10 foot inside his property line, and that block wall is 8 to 10 feet from your property line that's at the bottom there.
Yeah, it's quite a distance, actually. That
slope
doesn't...
The slope looks more vertical in the photo than it is in reality.
It is very...
The reverse. Well. The slope is steeper than it appears in that... Okay. Depending on how we look at things and what's going on.
The distance between that wall and that fence is pretty significant.
His wooden fence is significantly higher than the block wall. And yes. Okay. I'm not looking for trouble.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get
a
clarification on scope and scale on that deal.
Yeah.
Before you leave, can I ask you another question? Would it be a greater impact or less impact on your property if he put the fence on the property line? If he moved it down, wouldn't it increase his visibility?
He would have to, if he moved that down, he would have to build a 20-foot fence to get the same height as he has there.
Well, he doesn't have to have the height. He only has to have a 6-foot, or he doesn't even have to have a fence on his backyard property line. Because if he moves the fence down the slopes, he's going to get a better view from his downstairs windows, which he's actually cut his own view off by putting the fence where he did.
Right.
But would that impact your privacy more or less if he moved it down?
Yeah.
It would.
When the people lived there before, they stopped the fence over here, even with the house, which was, and had, they had a little dog or something. They put some kind of wire fence up there. And I could not see them unless they walked right over to the property line because of the angle. And they couldn't see me unless they walked over to the property line. So there was never a privacy issue before.
Where the fence current is, their fence is where the current fence is now.
Right.
But that wasn't on their property line. It was always in that location.
It's always been in that location, up on the flat. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keene. Okay. Comments on this item before we entertain a motion?
Or the public hearing is still open.
Oh, okay. You are correct. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to speak on this item before we close the public hearing? Thank you, Mr. Downey, for that reminder. Not seeing anyone else from the public who wants to come up and speak, I'm going to close the public hearing portion of on this item and return the responsibility, I guess, back to the commissioners. And now, are there comments from the commissioners on this item and toward getting a motion to either approve or deny this appeal? Comments, Mr. Shira, why don't we just start at your end?
So just, you know, looking at our code and what it says, and the key word to me is it's really easy to think that in a viewshed review that it means that if there are any impacts at all, that this project cannot go forward. And the unreasonable or unnecessarily affect views of surrounding properties. So, yeah, is that a matter of interpretation? Sure, it is. But looking at the scope of this property or of this project at 178 square feet, going out to the project, looking at it from every angle, driving around the neighborhoods, I just this to me, with all due respect to the appellant, it is a very, very small impact compared to the size of the view from what when you're looking out to the entire ocean. In particular, the case was brought up, if it would have been a three-story or a two-story building at 30 feet, huge impact for your view. And you know, that's just to Mr. Keene, I'd have to say, you know, to going to the quality of person that you are, the standard that when you said you didn't want to impact your neighbor at all, that's above and beyond our code, and that goes to the character of person that you are, and probably our world would be a lot better off if there were more people like you in it. But we have to look at what our code says, and we have to consider the rights to develop the property close to you. So looking at that, for me, I have to say that it is reasonable, and I have to say that Sam's conclusions were right on. So that's where I'm at.
Commissioner George?
I think it's always a tricky situation we get ourselves in when we make blanket rules to make things easier to pass. Had this deck been built a month or 2 months afterwards, it would have been a non-issue because it would have, for the most part, conformed to the newly approved deck guidelines. That being said, it wasn't. It was submitted before, and even if it had, it didn't conform anyways, but it wasn't. And where I have issue is that construction on something that wasn't permitted moved forward knowing that it should have been permitted. And that, to me, can't be overlooked. If we overlook it and we approve it, then it just tells every contractor in our area, go ahead, do what you need to do. It's going to be easier for us to approve it for you than to have you go through the proper channels. And I'm a stickler that way, and I apologize, but that's just who I am. It clearly, clearly blocks the view of the appellant. Granted, it may just be her view that it blocks. It still blocks her view. And when you read the resolution number 3, the purpose of the addition will not unreasonably or unnecessarily interfere. It does interfere, and there's no way around that. In my view, it does interfere. Yes, you have the right to build a 27-foot-tall structure, and if that's your desire, then you would move forward with a proper permitting in order to do so. This wasn't properly permitted. So I struggle with the size because it is small, and in the big scheme, like Commissioner Shiro said, it really is not a major thing. But to the people who live in this area, it is a major thing. And I would hope that if something were to come up that would affect your view, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last name.
Irons,
okay. Jonathan Irons?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Irons, that I would hope that we would be able to protect your property rights as well. And in this case, I feel like the property rights of the owners around you are more than substantially compromised, and for that reason I'm going to have to support the appeal.
Very good, thank you. Commissioner Fowler Payne.
Well, when you look at two different sets of pictures, one provided by the appellant and one by the property owner, so you really have to go to the site and actually stand there, which I did, and I think Mr. King saw me today in the red car. You were sitting on your front deck. And like I said, I know what that view is from 1210 because I lived there for several years. And when you're standing on that deck area that she said that she has built out in the front, and you look off on the angle, you're not looking straight across the street, first of all. This picture that the property owner presented is more realistic to what the view is going to be from 1210 Linda Drive, and I know that quite well. And you're not looking straight out. You're looking on an angle out through there. So I don't think... and this picture kind of depicts it, that, if you're going to have the view obstructed, it's not going to be more than 1 foot. And so, like I said, when you get photographs from this picture, was taken from straight across the street from Silva's property, because I know that direction. And that's where that is showing this high, but she didn't take it from her porch. This picture is taken from the street, because I know that this is the more view that you would see from that point. I enjoyed it for many years myself, and there, that was long before any of the other houses were built up on Elm Street. The houses were built there. That was a subdivision. Like I said, I know what it was. I know those houses have all been added on to. I can't see denying this. We would be denying the property owner the same privilege that the other property owners in that neighborhood have been awarded or given to do additions, second stories, decks. Like I said, I went through that. I went down that street, and you can have a copy of this if you like. This is the listing of every one of the houses that have second stories or decks built on them. And nine of them were on the list that we got of people that signed in favor of the appeal. So to me, it's like, how can you persecute somebody for the same thing that you've already had in the past or got or did? Maybe they were... because they were second stories, they didn't have to go through a view shed review. I don't know. Those houses have been remodeled in the past 20, 30, 40 years. So, I can't support the appeal. I think we should uphold the planning department's recommendation. Everyone's, got that same opportunity. Property owners at 1012 Linda Drive, she could come in next week and ask for a second story on her house or a deck on over her garage. And maybe it wouldn't have impact another resident, and I know it wouldn't because I know where it is, but it would impact the parking lot of the school. Somebody may choose to sit there and wait for their kids and
okay.
enjoy the view. So what, you know, how, where do you draw the line? That's it.
Okay.
I'm done.
Thank you. Commissioner Mack, your comments?
This project right here shows us that we have more work to do in terms of developing design guidelines and view shed requirements, specifically for hillside sloped lots. You know, when I was personally looking at the deck and the revised deck requirements coming forward, I was imagining flat lots and subdivisions, and I wasn't thinking hillside. I think we need to come back as a commission and revisit that and ask staff to bring that back so we can add more language or see what other kind of issues arise from topography changes in which privacy is being ignored with our view shed requirements. And this is a perfect example of that, in which the rights of one property owner is affecting the rights of another property owner. And what I've seen in the past is you end up creating neighborhood building wars with this type of thing. And if we don't get a grasp of it now and we look at our development code, neighbors are just going to keep building up until they get as high as they can, like they have done in Shell Beach. Now everyone's got two stories and roof decks. And Shell Beach is going, hey, we need to stop this. And they're going through a political process right now to prevent further roof decks. So I'm taking this project seriously, even though it's a small deck. It was wrong to proceed without a permit. And here's the process that you would have gone through. You would have worked with your architect. You would have brought it forward. In this case, I think it should have went to architectural review. One of the primary things for our architectural review is they look at those privacy issues. When there's houses and neighborhoods going in other neighborhoods, they are looking at the windows going out that second story and seeing if they're looking in the master bedrooms and seeing if they're looking into the living rooms. They're looking at that. They're sensitized to that. And they make the recommendations. Here, this has just been thrown through with no mitigation whatsoever for the neighbor's privacy. Can a design be brought forward for a roof deck on that level? Absolutely. That would take in consideration everyone's concerns. I've heard the concerns of the neighbor and a transparent wall. I think that's a fantastic one. Could it be done? Yes. Can you provide more privacy to the rear yard of the adjacent lot? Yes. If that deck was pushed in probably about 6-8 feet and more centrally located in the home, it would have cut the view off to the backyard and out towards the horizon. I won't go there with you on that. But if that deck was pushed further to the center of the home, at that same elevation, and there is roof in front of it, or a different configuration, or mansard going off the back, it would have blocked off the visualization down. If you just drew a cross section, your architect would have done that for you. Another thing that could be done, you know, is vegetation, planting, Italian cypress. But one thing I am opposed to is the open rail. That open rail, I know it's solid on the back and the sides, but it would give more protection to that neighbor, to Mr. King's property, if that rail was not open and was not a picket fence. And that's how a lot of other jurisdictions handle it, too, is by closing up that rail and not allowing it to be open. So I am mixed about this because I know there's a solution out there that can make it better for everybody. And I'd like to hear from the remainder of the commission here.
That leaves me.
Yeah.
I have read the various letters and have visited the neighborhood and looked at it and am familiar with the project. it is an issue of balance, and there are issues of competing property rights. And my right as a homeowner to build a second story in and of itself is going to impact either the view shed or the privacy of my neighbors. I'm a proponent of creating codes and ordinances that deal with the vast majority of this type of development with a specific desire to when issues and items, you know, warrant having a review, that they are provided and presented for that kind of review. With that being said, it's you know, it becomes tough just because, you know, the scope and the nature and the issues around permitting and timing and things of that nature that are here in this deal. I do have concern about the current codes and the ordinances and how we address these hillside properties and the increased potential for, you know, view shed issues that don't exist in the flatlands of Arroyo Grande. But for me, I want to be able to step back and focus on the permit that we have in front of us, the project that we have in front of us, and the appeal that we have in front of us. I, too, am not happy that a part of this process ended up a result of the fact that part of this was not permitted. But for me, I look at back at the scope and the request of the homeowner, the desires of the homeowners, and the other issues surrounding timing of the architect, as well as securing the waterproofing of the roof and things of that nature. This error, I think, is one that has been attempted to be resolved and has been addressed. We have not chatted about penalties and fee penalties and things of that nature surrounded with this, and I'm not going to do anything more than just say we haven't discussed that. I'm not going to bring it up. To me, this is more of a staff level issue when items, non-permitted, you know, items appear and projects get red tagged. You know, that those decisions are made at the staff level, and I'm just going to leave that at that. For me, as far as the design on the thing and looking at it, I like the idea of a solid wall. For me, part of the issue with the solid wall is just providing some protection against the wind that's going to be existing up there and protecting whatever patio furniture you may have stored up there. That solid wall is going to provide much more of a protection over time. A solid wall on all four sides or three sides of this, however many sides there are in this little deck, you're going to certainly, if it's solid all the way around, you are going to have issues with how do you, you know, allow water to get drained off and make sure that those get addressed, you know, adequately. I do agree with Commissioner Mack that a solid wall on the side that's facing Mr. Kane's property downhill is probably more appropriate. From a personal standpoint, I like the open rail look, but I think from a privacy standpoint, it's probably appropriate to do that. And I don't like micromanaging jobs as far as color and all that kind of stuff, but I do think that making that into a light blue-gray kind of tone to minimize whatever visual impact that would have in general with the light blue-gray skies that we have over Arroyo Grande most of the year would be appropriate to minimize that visual impact on that block wall that's there. And with that being said, this balancing act between the privacy of the neighbors and the visual impact and the individual rights of an owner to build out and develop their own property, you know, I look at this as a single-story addition. I look at the privacy impacts, from my personal opinion, probably less with this deck than even with, let's say, it was a bedroom or some other second-story room that was up there. Given its location, my guess would be a pretty good-sized picture window that would be made, and perhaps even a small deck on the outside of that second-story addition that would have been made about the same size of the existing deck that's being proposed or that's in the middle of being built right now. And all things being equal, that could have easily have been a ministerial, you know, decision, because that's all within the codes. Given the modest size and the scope and what I see presented here tonight, I cannot support the appeal. And with that, I'm entertaining a motion.
I move the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande hereby deny appeal case number 17-003 and approve view shed review 17-009 as set forth in Exhibit B with the addendum that the back wall, that would be the south wall, is that right, would also be a solid wall, not a split rail wall. I guess that's it.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? We've had a pretty good level discussion so far. Hearing none, I'll call for a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
No.
Commissioner Mack?
No.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. With that vote, the appeal is denied on a 3-2 vote. Thank you very much for your active interest and participation in this. And may you go forward and all your work in the future be permitted before the fact.
It's called change order.
Okay. Very good. We do have a, there are a couple of other items if we can move on. Right. The next item we have is a non-public hearing item that's on the agenda. It's a consideration of pre-application 17004 for the modification and condition of approval of the 54-room boutique hotel here in the village.
And before you start, I'm going to recuse and excuse myself.
Very good. Commissioner Shiro is hereby excused from discussion on this particular item. If we can have a staff report on this, that would be very helpful.
Certainly. I'll proceed when Commissioner Shiro exits the room.
Very good.
All right. It appears that Commissioner Shiro has left the room.
Okay.
Good evening again.
Before we last do it, for the public that is here, you guys are welcome to have your conversation, but if you, Mr. Keene, Mr. Iron, you know, if we can just move out of the room and continue your conversation, we can have our meeting. Thank you very much. Okay, now we're ready.
Good evening again, Commissioners. So this evening, the non-public hearing item in front of you is a pre-application 17004. It's for a project that's already been approved by the commission, the conditional use permit for the boutique hotel, the 54-room boutique hotel down the street at 325 East Branch Street. So a little bit about the project itself. You go out and look, and construction's proceeding forward at this time. Where there was some delay, you might have seen additional groundwork being done. It turns out there was a former, that used to be a former dump site for the city at one point in time. So they found a lot of old building material and things like that, so they were cleaning out a lot of that backfill. The applicant's coming forward with the pre-application to gain the commission's insight on a proposed modification. So if you'll recall, specifically condition of approval number 31 in the Planning Commission resolution number 16-2244 limited the building, the maximum building size on that property to 30,000 square feet. Again, the intent behind this limitation is to address mass and scale concerns. It's larger than the Village Core Downtown and Village Mixed Use District, which is a property is dual zoned. The thought process was the lot was so large at 1.86 acres, 30,000 square feet was a reasonable maximum building size. In the discussion and preparation of the plans, the applicant, SRK Hotels, came forward with the concept that they wanted to add a fitness room and a conference room to the plans. And as an amenity to the guests, the conference room specifically is an item that the city had been asking about in the very beginning. If you'll recall, everybody was on the commission at that time. We had when the project first came in and then was sent back to the architect for some revisions, we did talk about whether or not additional square footage of a conference room or something like that being added could be feasible. They went with all rooms instead. So we've been pestering them kind of on that topic. up until they actually said, yes, we want to look at doing that. So bringing forward a potential modification to the conditional use permit, amending the conditional use permit number, condition number 31, to either increase that maximum building size number or waive it altogether. But the intent would be to add approximately 1,034 square feet to the approved 29,380 square feet for a grand total of 30,414 square feet. This is a 3% increase in floor area from what was approved by the commission. And specifically what we're talking about here is modifying two sections. Modifying this section of the upper floor plan and this section of the upper floor plan. No additional rooms would be added. What this would be is filling in some open air space that's currently on the plans, turning this section into the fitness room, and then modifying some of the existing open air floor plan on the back side for the conference room, as you can see with the chairs. The fitness room section, if you'll recall, Branch Street is out here on this left-hand side. The creek runs along this pathway. So this addition would really be facing away from the public way into the creek area. You would be able to see it along the pedestrian pathway. And then this section with the conference room would be overlooking the parking lot, tucked down from the neighboring slopes off the slide there. And would this is the fitness room, this upper portion, and I would defer to the architect who's here this evening for any specific design modifications, but essentially using the same materials that were approved for the project, similar windows to address these two sections. And this would be from the parking lot looking at the conference room portion. So obviously having a larger window there to provide natural light into the conference room. Again, we're here looking at the potential. This is not a formal application. It's not a formal request. It's a pre-application to kind of assess the Planning Commission's interest on modifying that specific condition of approval, whether the commission would support that or not. And then the degree to which it would be supported. So could we go up to 30,500 square feet, which would allow this this addition, or waive that altogether? That would be up for discussion. One of the things that staff is in favor of for this would be the fact that we're not adding guest rooms, we're not adding any uses that specifically increase the parking requirements. It's not proposed currently to be open to the public in any way, shape, or form, which is why it would be limited only purely to guest uses, so guests who are already staying there. And we know that the South County area is lacking in meeting space. We hear that quite a bit over at City Hall, particularly on a busy day when we have a lot of meetings, and I have nowhere to take people to go sit down and have a conversation. So those are a couple of things to think about this evening, and then moving forward, providing direction to the applicant so that they can make a determination and bring back a formal application. But I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Do we have questions for staff on this? At this point, before I'm going to listen to from the architect. I'm going to ask the architect to make his comment, and then we can ask questions for the architect and make comments at that point. But kind of following our kind of standard protocol, are there questions for staff on this at this point? Commissioner George?
Is it purely a conference room, or will it be a conference / banquet room? Like, is that an option for them to serve food in there? Just trying to get an idea of what that looks like.
I think that's open for some direction at this point in time, okay. Being that it's a pre-app. My discussions with the applicant, it's always been a conference room only, not a banquet room. But you might clarify that with the applicant.
And is the intent of the city to have Is it going to be some type of a contract that the city has with a hotel as far as being able to rent those rooms out to locals, or is it just kind of whoever wants it just contacts the hotel and sees
You know, at this point in time, we haven't quite discussed that, really, because it's not a formal request. Likely it would be some kind of mutual agreement that if we needed to use it, we let them know ahead of time. But, you know, at this point, we don't even know that the owner is open to doing that, and there's obviously some liability concerns to doing that that they might want to consider before allowing outsiders to come in and use that space.
So I guess I'm not understanding, because at the beginning of the presentation, you had said that the city had come forward and repeatedly asked if they were going to build a conference room.
Correct.
So does the owner not know that this conference room is an option and just the architects are building
it? No, the owner does know that this is an option currently. So when I was mentioning earlier that the city was pestering them to do it on the initial application before the entitlement, we were prodding and hoping that a conference room would be included and that it would be open to the community for community use.
Okay.
At this time, given that it's just a pre-app, I don't know what the exact proposal would be.
Understand. And if we were to approve it, the conditions of approval would be to extend it for just that amount of square footage, right? It's not going to, like, the wording isn't going to be, okay, so now it goes from 30,000 to whatever it takes. It's going to be 30,400 and specifically for the purposes of a fitness room and a conference room. Is that my understanding?
That would be up to the will of the commission as a majority. So you could limit it purely to the 30,434. You could say 30,500 to allow for a little working with the drawings and things like that. You could waive it completely, or you could say, no, we're not interested in going above 30,000 square feet.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
And again, to clarify, that would not be an action that would be taken this evening.
Right.
It would just be direction to the applicant.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions of staff?
Okay. Am I correct in assuming that the conference room and the fitness room are not increasing the footprint of the building? It's just on the second level?
That's correct.
So you really haven't increased the footprint of the structure. You've just added where the setbacks were.
You've added building area, not necessarily footprint, correct.
Yeah. The concern I had, and I think we had at the onset of this original approval, was parking. So now if you the fitness center, I can see they're going to restrict that to the use for the occupants and guests there. That's not going to be open to the public, or I would assume it wouldn't be. Otherwise, you'd be opening a new gym.
Correct.
In the village. But as far as the conference room, now if that's opened up to the general public to come in and use that conference room and possibly do, like Commissioner George says, a banquet, are we going to have adequate parking, or is it going to overflow into Mason Grills? You know, if all the rooms are rented and you have your employees there, is there going to be adequate parking facilities for, you know, I don't know what the size of that would, 250
sure.
square feet, but...
Sure, great question. You know, at this time, being that it's a pre-application and the formal, you know, project description hasn't been provided, I did assume that would be limited purely for guest use. Obviously, with my assumption would be that any external use of that space would be during the daytime, maybe potentially during the hours when guests have already left and rooms are being cleaned, if it's being used by an outside organization. But that would be something that on a formal application we'd want to take a look at and see what exactly is the project description, what does this do to the existing approval, and make a recommendation moving forward.
Well, I just, you know, wanted clarification that someone's not going to come in on a regular basis and rent that conference room.
Correct.
End up short of parking spaces, because we seem to be short of parking every project we come through. But then we'd have Mason Grill complaining to us because they're taking their spaces away from them.
Certainly, and like I said, on a formal project description, that could be something that the commission ends up looking at. And they, like I said, the applicant might bring forward a project that says, no, we're not going to open this up to outside. It's only for our internal purposes, in which case, that kind of goes away. They might say, we're not going to open it up to the outside, but maybe we'll let the city use it. We have a parking lot across the street. But yes, in general, the way that the project description comes forward and then looking at all those constraints of the site as they are make that recommendation moving forward.
I didn't pull the old plan out, but is there any place where the parking could be expanded to?
No, that site's been used to its maximum.
Inch on that parking thing. So I would just be concerned that, we'd be shooting ourselves in the foot on the parking issue.
Certainly. And if you'll recall, we did discuss during the original entitlement that by the code, it's overparked. We had some discussions on in staff parking and manager staff and for service staff as well. And so that was what the commission kind of said, well, the extra parking would be potentially for the staff during their working hours when maybe the guest use is down a little bit. But that would all be something that on a formal application the commission would be discussing in terms of a full project description.
I just don't want to see another project go where, and I know I have one right down the street from me, every day they're tell their employees to park out on the street in front of the other residential units because they want to save those parking spaces for their customers. And that wasn't how it was approved. So, you don't want to run into that situation again. And once it's there, how do you fix it? My thing is, I always say, park in this parking lot back here. It's empty all the time, and there's no restriction on time. Send your employees there. Send your employees there. So I don't know if that's too far for them to go, but, if that's the way you have to get your project approved, then that needs to be taken into consideration.
Commissioner Mack?
So, question for staff is, isn't it the director allowed to make an increase of 10% on our standards at will? But in this case, probably we're conditioned to 30,000 square feet, and that's why you're here today, is to ask to go beyond that?
Correct. So there is some discretion in terms of I totally blanked on the word. Shuffling of the numbers, so to speak, and as you mentioned, 10% sometimes in some instances, that typically would require a minor exception to go above 10% or to go to 10%, things like that. In this case, some genius of a planner had the great idea to throw a specific condition in there that said 30,000 square feet. So you're welcome for being here this evening. And so that's why we're here looking at this tonight.
Well, I know the applicants here or the representatives here to get feedback to see how the commission would feel about these modifications, and for me, that was one of the things I was looking for when the project first came forward, is to have a public space and to have the fitness area and an area open to the public. A lot of the boutique hotels, if you will, hotels have those meeting spaces, whether it's for wine tasting or inviting guests or even renting that space out. It is a moneymaker for the hotels. My issue has always been parking, and it will always be parking. As by itself, by the numbers, you can say that it works. But when you take in the project together with the restaurant next door, it does not work. And you're going to have the two uses fighting over each other for the parking. Now that the Mason Bar is complete, there's not enough parking for Mason Bar. A lot of those, and I find myself, I go there too, and I'm parking either in the street or the public parking lot, and it's totally full. So my question is more like, when this hotel's complete, are all those parking stalls now going to be marked for exclusive use for the hotel, or are the hotel guests going to be parking all over the city and walking to this boutique hotel because the spaces are being taken by the restaurant? That's something that needs to be addressed. In terms of the uses, I think the uses need to be integrated into the hotel. As opposed to a location, I think the location is absolutely wrong, putting it in the back of the upstairs in a very remote location, totally inaccessible from the front of the building and some of the other uses. It wants to be closer to the lounge and the entry area and the main focus of when you come in, oh, where's the meeting? Boom, right there, second door on the left. So for me, architecturally, it wants to be on the ground level at the entry, not in the back of the most private area of the hotel, nestled around some rooms to the rear. So I have problems with the location, not the use. In terms of the square footage increase, yes, we're not increasing the building square footage. The footprint of the ground level. We haven't lost any parking stalls. That's a good thing. But I do share, you know, if this is open to the public and all of a sudden 30 people come to a meeting or some event or some private event, where those people are going to park or at the peak time. So that is an issue for me. I'm not saying it's a deal breaker, but it is an issue for me. And I don't know if you can pull up the ground floor plan. I know it's in our packet.
Unfortunately, I didn't put that in the PowerPoint. Okay. I'm sorry.
I was just going to laser point or show you what I was talking about on the ground level, where a meeting room would be more appropriate within the facility. Because when you're providing another use, you want it to be used. You want it to be easily accessible. You want it to be used. You don't want it just to be a bonus area that's never going to be used, and then you come back a couple of years later, oh, we want to turn it into something else now because it's not being used. So you want it to have its best chance of success in putting it in the best location for that use. And you'll find that guests usually don't want to be right up front next to the where you check in. You know, the more your public areas want to be where you just check in. So those are my comments.
I have a comment about that there. When you're saying that putting that
We're area, still having kind of questions for staff, if we can.
Well,
I have one question for staff, and it's mostly a point of clarification. And it too starts fighting the minutia here of this deal. You're talking about a 3% increase in building size, and that's the 1,000 square foot additional square footage to an existing 29,000 square foot. But as a point of comparison, exceeding the 30,000 square foot limit by 414 is really 1 1/3 or 1.4% increase over the allowed max.
Correct.
So we really are talking about pennies rather than nickels as far as a change in the overall scope of this project. 1.38 over the 30,000. So I looked at that and went, boy, we are really shaving things here. I have a number of comments, but I just want to make sure we're going to transition from questions into comments. I'm going to give the architect an opportunity to make any kind of, you know, make a presentation or comments. You may not have anything formalized here before we make any kind of comments. So do you want to...
Good evening, Chair and members of the Planning Commission. My name is Michael Dammeyer of Stephen Puglisi Architects. Matt touched on pretty much what's going on here. There was an ownership change right in the middle of the permitting process where SRK came in. They're experienced hoteliers. They know what makes a good project. They know the types of amenities that you should provide to your hotel. And I'm sure the city wants to see a nice project going there. The owner has done nothing but strive to make this better. We're currently going for LEED Silver on the building, which will be great marketing for the city. And he really wants this meeting space and fitness center. I'm not sure where the idea of this being public came about, Matt. The owner wants this meeting space to be internal to the hotel. It wouldn't drive up any of the parking. I know he's open to a deal with the city to use it for meeting space, but that would require the city parking in their spots, going across the street to use it. I don't really want to get into like the location of the meeting space. I understand where you're coming from, Mr. Mack, but I just wanted to hear the thoughts on increasing that square footage, because that's why we're here tonight, and that's the elephant in the room. Did you want me to go through and answer all the questions?
No. If there are questions, if you don't mind, don't feel compelled to extend your presentation longer than you really want to. I think that I think we recognize the scope of what you're really
see tonight. Just the 30,000 square feet, which
right.
we feel is, you know, the comparison of how many lots we merged to come to this, and the ordinance where it's the 20,000 square feet for the village core and the 10,000 for village mixed use, and we combined six of those lots that we could afford to come up a percentage.
Correct.
All right.
Correct. If you don't mind hanging out there for a minute in case there are some. Are there any questions here for the architect? Okay. Don't be shy.
So back to my original question, and I think you kind of alluded to it. So I had asked if it was going to be a conference room or a banquet room or all of the above. So are you thinking that the intent is to have it purely be a private room for administrative stuff, and then if you want to deal with the city, that's separate? Or is that something that is open to the public if they wanted to rent it out for a party or for a meeting or anything like that?
I highly doubt it would be open to the public to rent out for a party. I think this is more of a business type deal where they come and they stay at the hotel and they're able to use that amenity.
Okay.
Administration can use it. The city can work their own deal to use it. If there's a special community group that works through the city to use it and can use the city provided parking spots, maybe. But for sheer public renting out parties, banquets, that's not in the scope.
Okay.
Yep.
The reason I ask is, you know, people are starting to see the construction, and obviously there's a lot of people who have animosity towards something so big going in. So anything that we can provide that would benefit the locals is always something that would be nice. So if we're able to say, hey, you know, here's a room that now little small organizations, if they want to have their meetings there or something as an option, another meeting area in town, it might be something worth considering instead of, you know, just purely closing it off to the public, having something that even though the hotel is for guests, if the room is available, it might be nice that, you know, the public might have the ability to rent it out. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Fowler-Payne, you have some comments you would like to make on this at this point?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment on John Max on the location of a conference room. You know, I think the best location for it is where they have it indicated in the back, because that's where the major portion of the parking is. And when you, you know, go to a nice boutique hotel, or expensive as it is, you're not going to want to park all the way there in the back while people are using the parking spaces up front for the conference. So I've just felt that as far as the hotel accommodations, those spaces would be the least likely to be used and the best location for a conference room. The fitness center is going to be utilized by the guests, so it doesn't really matter where that's at, but I think keeping, if that's the route we go, I think keeping it in the back is probably the best location, because if you do have outside people using it, then that's where they're going to park, in the back. And they're not going to encroach on the area for the hotel guests parking. Anyway, that's just my concern thought. But back to what Commissioner George said about opening it up to the public. You know, I don't see that I have a problem, but other than parking, because when we went over this project, we were just totally maxed out, and I can't see, you know, I don't know how many people you'd have in a conference room, but you got a table there with what, probably 15, 20 seats on one table. Those people aren't going to come together can go and say, oh, I'm going to come and pick you up to go there because you're not going to have parking. So you're going to have 10 to 15 parking spaces being utilized for it. So, you know, I don't know. Opening it up for the public is a whole nother issue versus having it just strictly. And I could see where you guys need a meeting room. You're going to have several employees. You're going to have employee meetings and, you know. So where would you hold it in an available room? So I don't know. That's just my comment. I would rather see it be kept in the back.
So the question
Sorry about that. So just to reiterate what you had shared with us, the location of these aren't really settled down yet. We're basically looking at diagrammatically, would we allow the increase for these two facilities to happen somewhere in the building? That's kind of what I'm hearing.
Well, yeah, that's why we're here tonight. There's pros and cons to where it's located. The pros, it's isolated from every bed wall in the hotel because you don't want to have a long night the night before at the Mason Bar and then have some kind of huge presentation happening right behind your head in the hotel at 9 a.m. in the morning. So there is pros for having it located back there. I do agree with you, having that public space, we have to be careful with that word, be on the ground floor by the entrance. That's definitely where it wants to be. But we're under construction right now. So we're trying to find places to put it.
And the other thing I would share, because after you shared with me that if the city was to, or other clubs or facilities go through the city to use the city parking, that's directly across the street. Now you're asking to go across the street and through this entire facility and down a couple of hallways to get to the very far end of the building.
Not ideal.
Not an ideal situation. So that's where I would look at it again and how the space is being used and by whom.
Well, I wouldn't want to be paying $200 or $300 for a night for a room either and have them having a conference and people coming and going right next door to my room. So
exactly.
You know, there's
That's why you typically find them right in the front lobby area adjacent to the breakfast area, or if you're doing the continental breakfast thing, it's just right at, you know, the food's there, the services are there, the clerk is there to say, hey, it's there's the door right there. You don't need a map. You don't need to look at a map and go this way, this way, this way. It's just really easy and convenient. So to visit that location, for me, is important.
Okay. For my comments, to focus on the increase in size, I look at this as an incredibly modest increase. I would not be in favor of abandoning all size limitations. That opens up too much of a hornet's nest. And as much respect as I have for staff, of just suddenly saying, hey, we want 32,000 or 33,000. From a practical standpoint, I don't see that happening. But I would certainly be in favor of increasing to, say, 30,500, you know, some modest thing. I hate to see some fine-tuning on a architectural set of drawings and suddenly be 2 or 3 feet over this fixed limitation and you know, come up against a hard number wall that's a hiccup more than anything else. In reality, even this 414 feet in my mind is kind of a hiccup. On that regard, I'd be certainly in favor of amending or increasing, you know, that condition 31 to allow for, you know, this modest increase, whether it should be 30,500 or 30,100 or 31,000. Here again, the footprint of the building's not changed. We're not changing the number of rooms and the overall occupancy. With that being said, and that's really the focus, I am going to add my 2 cents on location and use. I do have concern. I'm of the opinion that given the location of this room, that by default it would not end up seeing very much, if any, outside use on it. It's just not an appropriate location, a conducive location, access to it. It looks like there's a stairwell there on the end, on the outside of the building, that would end up being used. But given parking constraints and just the locational constraints, if that's the location of it, I don't see that being a big issue. If that needs to be a condition, my gut guess is that the developer and the hotel owner would would accept that, you know, this is primarily for the use of guests at the hotel. If they have a guest speaker or, you know, local, you know, participants to a meeting that primarily is designed for the guests at the hotel, there's no way that I want to get involved in trying to limit that. You know, so I see that as probably a good location for an in-house meeting room or an in-guest or guest-use type of conference room. But I think both of that and the fitness room are good amenities to add into that project. I don't have any problems, you know, looking at that and seeing that as additions. And I believe that's pretty much the scope of the comments, so there's no specific action that we need to be taking tonight.
Correct. Is that correct? Although this is a non-public hearing item, it just means we don't notice the public.
Absolutely.
We do have a member of the public in the room.
We do have a member of the public. Does the member of the public wish to stand up and speak on this particular item? Please take this opportunity now to get your 3 minutes worth of participation in this matter. Mr. Keene, welcome back.
Thank you. John Keene, 298 North Elm Street. I stay in about 60 motel rooms a year.
Lucky.
And what I see when I look at this about having the public go into that, I agree with John Mack, Commissioner Mack. Everybody would have to have a key card to get in that door. That door is a secure door. So to ask the public to have access to it, you have somebody stand there opening the door for everybody. That just wouldn't work for a public room. So if they want public, if they want to let people use it other than the guest, they're going to have to move it to the front of the building. In all these motels I stay at, almost all of them have fitness centers. The most underutilized piece of
building
space that there is. If I see one person in or two, that is a surprise. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Yeah, who wants to go on vacation and exercise?
Yes. Is there any, you know, absent other comments, is there anything else that we need to do and comment on this particular project at this point? Or did you get the feedback you were seeking from the commissioners that were here? Whether you liked it or not is separate from the fact that you got feedback from the commissioners. Is there any other? There's no action that we need to be taking on this particular item at this
point.
No,
it's just providing feedback to the applicant at this time.
In a spirit of feedback, I think that we have provided that to staff and the architect on this project. I'm ready to proceed to the next item on the agenda. Item 10 is a notice of administrative decision since November 21st. There are two administrative items on here. Are there any questions from the commissioners or, you know, concerning these two specific items?
No, did they already put the tree up?
I don't know whether the tree's up or not, but I know that's an annual event that a rubber bank you know, has been doing for a number of years.
Yes, and we thank them every year for doing that. It really does add to the community.
It does. Is that a nice?
I was just always wondering, why did they have to have a permit to put a, I mean, if you put a tree in your front yard, you wouldn't have to have it. So is it because it's commercial or?
Yeah, it's commercial. It's open to the public. The location and the size of it, it allows the Community Development Department to review that, add conditions onto it, such as putting up and tearing down, ensuring building permit, you obtain building permits, things like that.
Even so, Christmas tree lights, but even ambient lighting at off hours and things of that nature, the impact on traffic and things of that nature.
Was this fundraiser the one that was held this last weekend for the?
Yes.
I'm not going to say.
Yes. You are correct.
Are there any commissioners that wish to share any communications with staff or the public here tonight at this point?
No, I asked Matt earlier how that
Methodist campground was gone, so I don't know whether you guys want to hear what he told me.
Or that's next under staff communications.
Perfect.
Mr. Downing
Thank
an opportunity to respond in the staff communications on that.
Certainly. So a couple of items to update the commission on this evening. So the first is Camp Rio Grande, the Five Cities Community Services Foundation, not the Men's Club. It's an offshoot of the Men's Club. Now, the escrow did close. They are the owners of that property. They're currently working with a couple of folks in the community to have a site manager, so to speak. The city's moving forward with some of our tasks associated with the Memorandum of Understanding that was approved by council. So that at this moment in time refers to the historic evaluation of the tabernacle structure and the property and deciding to proceed forward or not with a historic designation. I believe the Community Services Foundation is setting up a website for the folks, for the public to go and learn more about. I'll advise you via email when that's available. And the city will also be putting a link to their webpage once it's up on our website so everybody can find it easily and quickly. And as that continues to develop and we will let you know as more things come up. And then obviously anything that needs Planning Commission review, you'll see firsthand. Second item is the East Grand Avenue Master Plan. So if the Planning Commissioners recall, Commissioner Mack is your representative on that stakeholder group. We did have the stakeholder interviews month and a half ago at this point. Very exciting thing that we did was a few weeks ago we had what we call a pop-up workshop at the farmer's market down on Grand Avenue one fine Wednesday morning. Weather was perfect. We were looking at rain there for a little while, but it ended up not raining. And working with the farmer's market folks, they allowed us a space where we set up a tent, had posters and things out there, trying to gain the community's thoughts, ideas, issues, all that kind of stuff. We didn't get a good total number count of folks who were there. Not everybody signed in, and some folks were in and out and then back in and then back out. But we estimated that there were probably at least three different people in there at any one point in time. We usually stayed 5 minutes to 20 minutes. We did have somebody stay for about a half hour. We were there for 3 hours. So we had a lot of folks stop by. I got a lot of great comments. Right now, moving forward on that project, the technical experts on the traffic and parking and on the real estate components have done their research. They have some of their data and were toying with the idea of holding a joint Planning Commission and City Council workshop, trying to get everybody in one room and say, here's what we have found, here's what we're hearing from the community, and kind of where should we continue to proceed on this path. So we're looking at that. Keep an open mind on dates and things. Obviously, we're running into the holidays at this point, so that's not going to make anything easier. But progressing forward, very excited about that project. And then one other item, more of a question for the commission. I don't recall if it was last meeting or the meeting before. I believe it was Chair Martin had requested a printed out zoning map of the city, one of the large formats. And several other commissioners seemed to kind of like that idea. So I wanted to, before I had our people print them, I wanted to check and see who all would want one. So I have one.
Is it available via PDF?
It is. It's on the website.
I'd like to have a hard copy.
Okay. So I have two, going once, going twice. There you go.
Don't forget to ask Commissioner Shara, who's not here, if he would like one before you get those printed.
And obviously, if you get down the road and decide you want another one, just contact staff and we'll print one out for you. Other than that, that's all staff communications this evening.
With that, and without additional business in front of us, I hereby adjourn the meeting.